Welcome to the Building Jerusalem podcast. I'm Stephen Neal, the pastor of Alden Bethel Church and blogger at Building Jerusalem.
And I'm Stephen Watkinson, the minister at St. Luke's and St. Peter's in Rochdale and blogger at Northern Solace.
Well, my intention in starting this blog is to just say some stuff, and hopefully you'll say some stuff, and it will hopefully be vaguely interesting to people listening. A lot of people who read my blog will know that Oldham's fairly deprived. Officially, it's the most deprived town in England. I think, if we're being honest, there are plenty of other places that would vie for that title. There's quite a lot of Muslims around in our area of Glodick as well. Do you just want to tell folk a little bit about what Deeplish in particular is like, where St. Luke's is?
Yeah, so Deeplish, where we live and where one of the churches is, that is 90-odd percent people from a Muslim background, at least. We're the only church in Deeplish compared to a lot of mosques. Rochdale in general would be one of those places that would vie with Oldham for being the most deprived. I was talking to someone yesterday who said the thing that came to their mind when they heard about Rochdale was abuse cases, which is kind of what Rochdale has been in the news for. And we have all those statistical deprivation indicators across the two. At Newbold, also where I work, slightly less people from a Muslim background, although still 60-70%, I think.
But there's a lot of people who would say stuff like the Anglican Church is still a good boat to fish from. Has that been your experience in Deeplish, or would you say Anglicanism has not been hugely helpful to your ministry?
So Anglicanism gives you opportunities, so in one sense. So the Church of England has a parish that covers every square inch of England, which means that there are churches that cover all these kind of areas. And so that gives me the opportunity to go and do ministry in Deeplish and Newbold. I come with a stipend, I'm paid, there's no kind of worries for me about that, and all that's good. But I think it's probably observably true that conservative evangelicals, at least, don't tend to rock up in places like Rochdale.
Why do you think that is, though? Why? I mean, if we're being honest, in the Free Church, that's exactly the same. So most nonconformists are not flocking into places like Oldham, and they're not jumping into council estates around the country. Typically, you'll find people having no problems filling a church within spitting distance of a tube stop, but you won't manage to find many people jumping into, say, Cheetham Hill in North Manchester, or though there are some folk going there now, which is great, and you won't find many people jumping into Fitton Hill in Oldham, though again there are people looking at that. But it's much, much harder seemingly, and it's the noises I hear from Anglicans and nonconformists alike. People are just not jumping in to deprived communities and anywhere that appears difficult. Why do you think that is?
I think within Anglicanism, within Church of England, there's a sort of set of reasons for that. There's the reasons that we probably all find, which, I was asked recently at something, I had to say something about why I liked where I lived. And it did take me quite a long time to think of something, actually where we live, it's not an ideal place to live in all kinds of things. There is a lot of crime, there is a lot of drugs, there are a lot of deprivation problems. You're not going to look at it as, people don't make TV programs about escape to Rochdale. It's just not that kind of place, and so people don't want to come. Now, as Christians, it always feels quite sad when you say that, because that's not what serving the Lord Jesus is about. But that is how it works. Within Anglicanism, there's a real issue as well on, say, obviously we've got these battles going on within the church, a kind of liberal versus conservative kind of battle. And classically in that, the liberal gospel is the social gospel. And similarly, actually, with when there were battles with kind of Anglo-Catholics as well. So the Anglo-Catholics often went to the toughest areas. And the liberals, you know, I look across my deanery, my group of churches in Rochdale, it's just liberal. And people's passion often in those places is the kind of, we need to do good to Rochdale. That's the sort of gospel. And so conservatives have almost, in reaction to that, conservative evangelicals have kind of gone, well, we're not liberals and we're not Anglo-Catholics. And I don't think they've consciously said, so we don't care about poor people. But sort of subconsciously, that's not what we're about. We're about telling people the gospel. And so we don't have that kind of bias into going to sort of poor areas.
But then the big problem we've got is that we do have a bias, and our bias has been going towards very much not poor areas. You know, you find, as I say, a lot of churches in the southeast. I mean, if you look at the Gospel Partnerships as a good example of this, overwhelmingly their churches are in the southeast. Yeah. And if you look at the FIUC as another measure, they're a little bit more spread about. But I mean, you've got twice the number of churches in the south as you do in the north. If you compare that to the number in the most deprived communities, they are not replete with churches in deprived communities. If you then look at the numbers of members in those churches in deprived communities, they are almost uniformly smaller than the wealthier, affluent churches, whether in the north or the south, in, say, city centres, in posh suburbs. You don't have massive churches sitting on council estates and in places like Glodwick.
No, I think one of the things... people who've read some of the things on my blog would know that. See, one of my sort of texts, I think it's really interesting that as you live in places like Rochdale or Oldham, you realise that at kind of the governmental level, sort of social services, education, health service, all that kind of thing, the recognition of that means that you know you need to put more money and more resources into places that are struggling with some of these things. And the truth is, you see really obviously in sort of conservative evangelicalism that we do the exact opposite, that the money tends to stay within the kind of large church, middle class areas. Now, historically, why those churches are there and large, I guess, has loads to do with effective ministry in public schools and Oxbridge and, you know, UCCF student ministry and all that kind of thing, and people naturally gravitate and all that kind of stuff. But there's been no work really, it's perhaps harsh to say no work, but not enough work in kind of saying, well, actually, if we want to reach the whole of the UK, and there are massive swathes of the UK that don't fit this kind of middle class where you want to work, live, send your children to school.
That's right.
Then there's been no kind of realisation that to achieve that, you've got to put a lot of resource into it, and that's not easy.
And when you're talking resource, do you want to be a bit more specific about what we're talking about?
Yeah, see, primarily, I think it's people. So the tendency is to say money, and of course, you know, none of us are going to turn down money, but in truth, what you would use money for is people.
Yes.
And in some ways, more to the point, you want... if you want healthy churches, you need healthy Christians. And if you're in places where there just hasn't been much in terms of healthy churches, then there aren't going to be that many healthy Christians. And it's pretty hard to kickstart. So drop one guy in there, you know, talking about the Anglican model. I mean, the problem with the Anglican model is you drop one guy in there into often multiple churches like I've got, and then...
How many churches are you overseeing?
Well, so I've got two churches, and then with one of those churches, there's a school, and as an Anglican Church of England minister, you're expected to put quite a lot of, you know, I'm automatically on the governing body. I do assemblies every week, you know, and it's great. I mean, it's, you know, a fantastic opportunity to go and talk about the Christian faith to its church school in a Muslim area, you know. It's, you know, there's a lot of time being spread there, and you're expecting then to try and get something to happen in this sort of tough context that's had very limited ministry before. So when we talk about resources, the most helpful thing would be and I guess any minister would say this in any kind of small church context, but, you know, 10 people coming who, you know, had been a bit trained, were kind of solid. You know, we're not talking of been through theological college. We're talking about having been in a good church, are grounded in their faith, kind of thing. Coming, you know, you talked about you can put a church around a tube stop. Well, Greater Manchester doesn't have the tube; it has the tram, has the Metrolink. And we are on a tube stop. We are right near the station. You can be in the centre of Manchester in 10 minutes. So people can come and work. It's the same in Oldham, isn't it? I mean, you know,
we're half an hour from yeah. the centre of Manchester, so you can be a big city banker. I mean, Manchester's got the second biggest financial sector in the UK, I think, and London obviously having the first. So you can be a pretty wealthy investment banker working in the middle of Manchester and still come and live up in Oldham and enjoy our cheaper housing and our wonderful amenities. And you can basically come and be part of a church that really needs you. Fine, you could make your commute 10 minutes easier in the morning and go down to a massive Anglican church in South Manchester if you want to. But the reality is, how well are you going to be used for the kingdom doing that?
Yeah, and see, the hard thing, I mean, I grew up in South Manchester, you know, that within Church of England terms, there's kind of known to be this little Bible Belt, which is really North Cheshire. It's part of Chester Diocese, not Manchester, you know, which is where we went to church growing up. The reality is that, you know, and again, I totally understand. So what you do, and you're thinking, well, I'm moving from London, I've got this job in Manchester, and I ask, where are the good churches in Manchester? And someone says, well, there's this little belt round around South Manchester. So you end up moving into Cheshire. You've got good links into Manchester. It's I think Cheshire's about the most boring countryside in the whole country. I like hills. You know, it's a nice place to live, and there's access to the airport, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so that's what people do. And I understand all that, and I've done that. You know, I worked in a student work in a central London church, and you know, when someone comes to you and they've got their first job out of university and they're going to whatever city or whatever, and their first question is, you know, what church should I go to? Well, you immediately list through the big churches that you know about in those cities,
or you link to your mates.
Yeah,
you know, it's the guys you know. Or we had a guy who went to London, and we just go, well, who are our mates? Who do we know? Who are we going to put them in touch with? If we don't know anyone in the area, we then start looking at our lists of places that we generally trust. So for us, the natural places to look would be sort of the FIEC website, or I'm from a Grace Baptist background, so I'd start asking my Grace Baptist mates what's around that area. They're all mainly in the southeast as well. Basically, you just see, who do I know and who am I going to pass people on to? But then when you're Joe Bloggs in the middle of nowhere that no one's ever heard of, then all of a sudden people haven't heard of you, people aren't passing folk on to you, and it just perpetuates this small church situation.
Yeah, and I think you know, it's difficult, isn't it? So having worked in a big church with just loads of resources, loads of staff, loads of good stuff, one of the things is that and I can remember, I remember going, I was on a stag do thing for a friend, and they were all from this bit. They'd all been
Anglican stag do.
An Anglican stag do, yeah.
Were you all in frocks and everything?
No, although it's not, wasn't that kind of stag do, but they'd all been in this big church, and then they'd all, as students, and then they'd got their first jobs in various different places, as you do. And they'd all gone to not big church, probably sort of mixture of medium and smaller size churches, but probably places they'd been recommended. But you heard them talk and you realised that none of these churches was as good as where they'd been as a student. Now, some of that's just your student experience and all that kind of thing. But some of that is just obviously true, isn't it? You know, so when you've got a range of staff and they're helping in the preparation of the Bible studies, as opposed to showing up to the Bible study that's, you know, run by the bloke who has a full-time job and all that kind of thing. You know, when you show up to the services and you've got a person or two employed to make sure the music is good, and you're in London, and a bunch of your students go to the Royal Academy and the Royal School of Music and all that kind of thing. You set this standard for them, and then obviously they go somewhere else. And, you know, and part of me, some people for various reasons came to visit our churches from that church, and you could just kind of see in their eyes that they're looking at it going, wow, this is tin pot. And it is,
but
by
actually,
comparison.
But it's worse again, isn't it? Because the reality is, the higher up the educational spectrum you go, the more sort of cultural difference is flattened. And so what you get in a lot of student churches is, because everybody there is broadly educated, most people are going through university, some of them are going on to higher education again, you may well get a multi-racial church where you may have people from all over the world there, and people are very excited by that and think, isn't this great, you know, we've got all these different people here. But in the midst of that, you don't have a very multicultural church at all. You actually have a very monocultural church that's been flattened by your educational attainment, whereas then you go up to somewhere like my church in Oldham, and we have multi-ethnicity. So we, in our church, we've got people from Caribbean, Iraq, Afghanistan, loads of Iranians, English people, Eastern European people. So we have a pretty broad mix of folk from different countries. And yet, if you look at the educational attainment in the church, we've got people with postgraduate degrees, we've got people with single degrees, we've got people with no degrees, we've got people who've never left school, we've got people who've graduated from university in Iran, which we kind of don't accept in this country as being credible. You know, so we've got a bigger range, but it all looks weird to people because you have to try and accommodate all these different cultures, and they are different cultures in-house. So our problem is, we get English people coming to the church, and all of a sudden your Bible studies take twice as long because you've got to get stuff translated, and you've got to slow down for people who've never set foot in a church before. And you're explaining incredibly simple concepts very, very slowly to people because they neither have the English nor the theological background to understand them. And quite understandably, a lot of English people just sit there and think, this is rubbish, I'm not getting anything out of this. In fact, we've had that very direct criticism of us, saying, I don't get much out of this. Now, our answer to that is normally, well, you're not principally here to get stuff out of it, you're here to serve. Now, it may be that there are some churches you go to and it's full of seminary graduates, full of people doing PhDs in theology, full of people whose full-time job is studying the Bible, and you may be, for want of a better phrase, I think this is dreadful theology and ecclesiology, but for want of a better phrase, you're pretty low down the pecking order. So you are going to be the one who receives an awful lot in that church. You come to a place like ours, and if you've been a Christian longer than 5 minutes, you are going to be among the people who are the best trained, most knowledgeable, most able to teach others. And all of a sudden, you have to jump out of this mindset of what am I going to get, and straight into this idea of how am I going to serve these other people who know even less than I do.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it's interesting because I had some sort of postgrad background. I ran some postgrad stuff for students in central London. And one of my observations through that was that even in that kind of what would appear to be very educated sort of context, a lot of those postgrads found they weren't getting much out of stuff because it wasn't really aimed at, you know, it was aimed at a more general level. And I think there's two things you have to think about. One is, yeah, sure, if you've got a situation where you are serving, and ministers will know this, aren't they? I mean, you know, as a minister, you give and give and give. Right. And therefore, you do have to work out how you're going to grow. Because, sure, you grow as you prepare your talks and as you prepare your Bible studies and things like that. At least I hope I'm growing as I do that. But yeah, you probably do need some input and all that kind of thing. I think as ministers of churches in the areas we're in, yeah, we do have to sort of think about, okay, I recognise there's a group of people who, if our Bible study looks like this, then I need to find ways to help them because the risk is they're just going to stagnate. So I think we have to, you know, it's okay to understand that. But equally, absolutely, you do want to sort of say to people, well, actually, you know, we come to church to encourage one another, to spur one another on. You know, we're about building one another up, you know, all that kind of language that we find in Hebrews and 1 Corinthians and so on. And yeah, we want to care for you as well, but it can't be all about you.
I mean, we've had this repeated theme in our church, not just during my tenure as pastor, but predecessors as well, where there's almost this push towards the homogenous unit principle that says, you know, if you've got all these Iranians coming in who can't speak English very well, well, why don't they just go off and set up their own church where they can serve one another more fully and serve each other, understand what's being taught better. And truth be told, if I looked hard enough, I probably could find an Iranian pastor or at least a Farsi speaker who could teach these guys. They could have their own church. But the problem with doing that, of course, is as soon as you set up an Iranian church in Oldham, they're not going to reach anybody other than Iranians. And if we're being brutally honest, there just aren't that many Iranians in Oldham to reach anyway. So it might feel a bit nicer for them. And occasionally, when you do end up with single language groups in your church, whether you've broken down into small groups and that's just the way it's happened that week or whatever, all of a sudden people feel something really nice because I'm suddenly able to dig into this in a way that I couldn't before. But it's all forgetting this idea that, well, we could set up churches where we were all just English speakers, we were all just Farsi speakers, we were all white, we were all Middle Eastern or whatever. But then I think what you lose is this idea of service. And I think because the wider church is fundamentally middle class and fundamentally white, so we don't have that many BME leaders. I don't think we've got that many BME elders. And the church as a whole is painfully middle class and white. We are so used to sitting in churches full of white English speakers that we never really have to think that much about service. And the occasional bits of service we do are just that. It's occasional. Most of it's me feeding off the minister, me feeding off the elders, me feeding off the staff, whatever your setup is. But we don't have to think about service that much. Whereas if you come to my church, you're immediately thinking about service the moment you walk through the door, because actually it becomes quite apparent we'll occasionally sing a song in Farsi and you don't get a lot out of that when you're English, and we'll occasionally let Farsi speakers pray in their own language and you don't get a lot of that out of that when you're an English speaker, and we have to slow down our Bible studies, which means you don't get as much out of that as you might do. And then all of a sudden you start thinking things like, well, the guy down south in my church was a much better Bible teacher, wasn't he? Because actually he brought the text alive to me in a way that just doesn't happen here. But of course the reason that doesn't happen here is because you're fundamentally serving others during the course of that Bible study. And I think far too many of us just make our church experience all about us. And even those of us who think we're a little bit more mature than that, actually, when it boils down to it, if we're not getting fed in the way that we feel we need to be fed, all of a sudden, all of that maturity seems to go out the window when we say, why aren't you serving me in the way that I think I should be served?
I think so as the kind of pastor as well, there's always going to be the pull to, so we all want to be successful. and I know it's then really important how you define success.
But, so how do you define success?
Well, truthfully, and it's probably a very Anglican thing to say in the kind of battles that we live in, but the thing that I push really hard on is that success is faithfulness.
Mm. We would say the same.
So. Yeah. So is that Kent and Barbara Hughes' book, Liberating Yourself from the Success Syndrome, or something like that?
We'll edit that bit out because that sounds rubbish. You can't remember the book title. Yeah, we're editing,
but it's really good. And he starts with that success is faithfulness. And I think it's really helpful. But the draws of our sinful hearts are to success being numbers and people's praise and standing on platforms and all that kind of thing. And to do that, you need to appeal to that the majority, which is the white middle class, which makes sense.
But the irony about that, and this is what I found really funny, is I think the kind of work our church is doing is the kind of work that gets us a lot of plaudits externally.
Yeah, true.
So people look at that and say, oh, you're reaching Muslims, that's wonderful. Isn't that great? I'd love to be doing that. Isn't that excellent? And it's the kind of thing where you go, oh, you're in a deprived area. Isn't that wonderful? And it's even the kind of thing that could, one day, if you're listening, John Stevens, get me a platform at something.
Yeah.
But the reality is that's all external. So you can get a lot of praise doing what we're doing.
True.
What I equally find is it's exactly that same model that gets us all the criticism internally. Because the people externally look at it and go, great, you've got Iranians come, you've got a multicultural church, you've got... And actually, who is it who loves that sort of stuff? It's the white middle class people who think, isn't it wonderful? Multiculturalism is brilliant. There are lots of good things about it. But they look at that and think it's excellent and wonderful, and wouldn't it be so liberal and fantastic if we were part of that, you know? And yet, it's when people then come and join your church, you actually get all the criticism internally, because your Bible studies aren't serving me anymore. They seem to be geared up towards helping folk who don't really know two words of English, or they're geared up to helping people who have a pretty tenuous grasp of the gospel.
Yeah, I mean, there's an interesting thing as well in it, but it surely it's got to be the case, given, I mean, again, speaking from an Anglican kind of perspective, but the Anglican decline is pretty spectacular. So, of course, in the short to medium term, we're going to kind of maintain these large churches where a lot of people are quite well taught, and, you know, if in effect the Christians that are, people who are becoming Christians are probably coming through something like Christianity Explored and then Discipleship Explored and then into Bible study. So, you know, they can appear quite well taught quite quickly as well. But if that decline is what's happening, I mean, we know, I mean, you've just got to know now, haven't you, that 90-odd% of the country that you're trying to reach knows precious little about the Bible, about the gospel. So most churches in the next, you know, 10 years even, they're going to have to be looking at their Bible studies looking like that, aren't they? Because you are going to be mostly trying to reach people who don't know anything at all. Yes. And if that's true, other than staying in your sort of one, you know, I mean, you can see within Anglicanism what could happen in terms of evangelicals, is that basically we end up with one or two big places in a big city and not a great deal else. And if that's what we want to go towards and not really reach out beyond that, then it's a good way to do it. But in effect saying, well, the little churches don't provide for me, so we're just going to go to the big churches. Mm-hmm. There's a real draw to that, but you can see where that's in the kind of decline, especially as I don't see the big churches really growing. Like they're doing well and people are becoming Christians, but it's not a kind of massive growth.
So where do you see that growth coming from?
Well, I mean, we have to be honest, don't we? It is hard everywhere in the UK now. We know that. We know that what I've just said is true, that lots of people just don't know anything. We're not in that Billy Graham kind of preach the gospel and people will just kind of become Christians. But where we are, I mean, everyone knows we're seeing conversions happening amongst Iranians, and that kind of what we've seen is quite a lot of asylum seekers more generally. We're seeing that. And, you know, there's been stats out there, haven't there, that basically we seem to be reaching people in the upper class and in the poorer classes and not much in the middle, and we've got all the churches in the middle.
Well, I think that's probably a good place to leave this for now, but we'll maybe try and dig into some of these things next time.